Good morning.
Okay, so I am going to talk about work that was done while I was with the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health Center for Public Health Preparedness. I have since moved and I'm now with a national nonprofit, so I'm presenting again from work that was done off of CDC funding while at the University of Pittsburgh. And I want to acknowledge my colleagues today, Stephanie Junker, who has done presentations on our work at previous APHA conferences. She's home with her new baby girl. And also my colleague Ellen Awesh, who is our data manager. So she is the one who demonstrates the good job that we're doing with our CDC funding on that reporting. And again, my name is Molly Eggleston, and I work for you, assuring a comprehensive and prepared public health workforce. The University of Pittsburgh Center for Public Health Preparedness, as I mentioned, is housed at our Graduate School of Public Health. We're funded federally by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and we launched our school preparedness program in 2005. A major component of our Center for Public Health Preparedness is providing all hazards preparedness for Pennsylvania school nurses in K-12 schools, and we use a standardized national curriculum from the National Association of School Nurses, or NASM. Okay, you're going to keep seeing this, I assume, and I just want to mention that the University of Pittsburgh Center for Public Health Preparedness knows about continuing education requirements. Our school nurses are nurses, period, in Pennsylvania, are just now starting to need CNE, but our school nurses have always needed Act 48, which is our state-specific school continuing education. So that's a point I wanted to make since we're all concerned about continuing education. Bless you. So as I mentioned, at the University of Pittsburgh Center for Public Health Preparedness, it's our mission to train public health professionals, including professionals in related organizations, to respond to bioterrorism, infectious disease outbreaks, and other public health threats and emergencies. We have niches that are represented by our little icons. We have a niche in emerging infectious disease, that's H5N1 for our chicken. It's like our mascot for Center for Public Health Preparedness. Also natural disasters, we have storms, we flood a lot in Pennsylvania. We have a specialty in public health emergency preparedness law, so making sure that everything's on the books and everyone understands roles and responsibilities. The school preparedness program that I mentioned started in 05. We have a focus on rural preparedness because Pennsylvania is a rural state. We have a niche in public health leadership, and we have a graduate certificate program, which is a 15-credit academic program. Am I talking too fast? I came from Pennsylvania, but I'm originally from New York. Thank you. As I mentioned several times, we're funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We are one of 27 such Centers for Public Health Preparedness across the U.S. We're all located at accredited schools of public health. Our center at the University of Pittsburgh covers the entire Commonwealth. We have a school-specific page on our webpage that's just for the school preparedness program. It has links to the National Association for School Nurses. It has hot topics, whether it's MRSA, or we just did one on gladiatorium herpes. We do things on oral health, whatever's hot. We change our spotlight. And as we know, a hot issue in school nursing and school services is all hazards emergency preparedness. And there has been much written about the specific need for training for school nurses, both clinical training, triage training, and the all emergency preparedness, emergency management training. And so that's what our niche program in school preparedness addresses. As you read in your session, we have three objectives for this presentation. And I'll get started into the heart of it. So what we have been doing since 2005 is training school nurses to this national standardized curriculum offered by the National Association of School Nurses. We started training school nurses because there's a natural connection between school nurses and public health professionals because we're all health professionals. And for our school nurse work, our center and the National Association of School Nurses consider school nurses to be first responders, because when something happens in a school, the school nurse is the only clinician in the school, usually she, is going to be the one who's going to have to respond to whatever it is. So what I like to say we do is we train school nurses to be agitators. They go back to their district and they say, where's our plan? Where are my gloves? Where's my to-go kits? Where are my, you know, portable medical records for when we evacuate? So a part of this training is to sort of raise awareness of what some of the needs are in terms of administrative support and also material support. The National Association of School Nurses curriculum, Disaster Preparedness for School Nurses, is used all over the country. It's a mix of PowerPoint, sort of didactic, and also interactive exercises. It's 6 hours, and it's taught by a NASN-certified school nurse trainer. They can come from all over the country to come to your session, or in Pennsylvania, we had a special dealio with NASN where we trained Pennsylvania school nurses to train other Pennsylvania school nurses. So we deployed our own to train our own in Pennsylvania. Again, this program started in October of 2005, and we have trained a third of Pennsylvania's school nurse population in this national curriculum from NASN. Thank you. We evaluate all of the programs in the same way. We list the objectives which come from NASN, and they have to rate the degree to which they can accomplish that objective before they came to the training and after they came to the training. So it's a retrospective pre-post test, and there are several advantages to a retrospective pre-post test. First of all, it's one administration, so you're not having, you have 6 hours together. You don't have to do paperwork on the front end and paperwork on the back end. So it's one, and they look back, gee, 6 hours ago, I think, you know, I could have identified the jumpstart triage, you know, algorithm for pediatrics. One, no, I never even heard of that before, but now I'm a four. So it's retroactive that way. The pretest also, sometimes if you do the traditional methodologically rigorous pretest, post-test, you can sort of get a bias because the nurses might not be familiar with some of the terms, which is absolutely true to our experience when you start talking about incident command system, national incident management system. More recently in 06 and 07, the nurses have heard those terms before, but when we started in 05, it was Greek. And certainly the retrospective pre-post test, when you look at the evaluation literature, can be used to evaluate the effectiveness of an intervention. Now, there are also some downsides or disadvantages of the retrospective pre-post test. The first one is, my experience with school nurses is they're highly compliant and highly motivated, so there might be a good subject effect, which is they want to show that they've learned something. So they say, if I was a one when I came in, they don't want the presenter to feel bad like they didn't teach him anything, so they're going to show some movement forward. So that's a potential bias. There's also a recall or a memory bias. Gee, where was I when I came in? Had I heard of NIMS? Gee, now I know what it means. It's in, you know, it's like I never didn't know it. So there can be a bias of, you know, where was I when I first came in? And it is also a little bit of a non-traditional methodology. So if you go to somebody who's going to be a hardcore, you know, rigorous methodology, the gold standard is that pre-post test, and so that's what they're going to want to see. We found that it's efficient for us. Again, we only have 6 hours in the classroom. We want to be able to measure our results. We want to be able to report back to NASN, to our funders at CDC. And we use this data to help inform our future interventions, which is what we'll talk about next. Okay, and what we have is a very high, it's okay. We have a very high response rate to our evaluations. As I mentioned, our school nurses need Act 48, which is our state-specific continuing education for school personnel. So we have a 92% response rate, in part because we do it in class, and sometimes we trade a completed evaluation form for the Act 48 certificate. So that's in part for our very high response rate. Thank you. So what our evaluation has shown using this retrospective pre-post test is that on a scale of 1 to 4, 1 being poor and 5 being excellent, the greatest change was seen in the ability to, 1, demonstrate appropriate triage of adults and children, and that's where they use the START and the jump start algorithm, to outline the components of a disaster response plan, and they're given model plans and they're given a checklist for what a comprehensive school emergency all hazards plan should have. To integrate the course content into existing and emerging disaster plans for one school. In Pennsylvania, all schools have to have a plan. Some of them, when we first started, were like covered in an inch of dust, and they were on that purple mimeographed paper. But we would train the nurses to go back and agitate and find it. We'd say, you're not starting from scratch. Something has been written down. Go back and find it. Now the best ones are on jump drives or on, you know, secure like wiki pages, so it can be accessed remotely if anything ever happens to the school buildings and you can't get that binder. We've also had gains in discussing how the school nurse participates in hazard analysis and resource assessment. We've had gains in describing actions associated with short and long-term recovery within the context of community preparedness, so that's getting back to the new normal. In the short term, reopening classes, readmitting students, in the long term, revamping your plan, maybe making modifications for students and faculty and staff with special needs. And we've also had gains in defining terms common to disaster preparedness. And that's your local emergency planning committees, your NIMS, your ICS, your incident manager, your MMRS, your Metropolitan Medical Response System, those sorts of things. We've also had some suggestions for improvement from our school nurse trainees. And basically what they've said about this six-hour NASN curriculum is it's a fire hose. Can you break this up over 2 days? Can you give us more breaks? Can we have more small group interaction or discussion or something like that? So either give us a smaller chunk or give us more time. The National Association of School Nurses would let us present it over 2 times, but I can't imagine school nurses being able to get 2 days off from work. I mean, it's hard enough for them to get 1 day off for a six-hour curriculum. They want us to present it on Saturdays so they can come. So we've never really tried the two-day session. We tried it once, and it was like one half a day in December and then one half a day in January. So I'm not sure that that was what the ideal would be. They've also asked for a slower pace. You think I talk fast? You should see the nurses trying to cram in, 500 slides in 6 hours, plus a triage exercise. They've also wanted more interaction, as you might imagine, from a PowerPoint presentation. And they do want sample plans. Sometimes our trainers, because they were from Pennsylvania, would bring their school's disaster plan, and that was always extremely popular. And they came in a variety of formats. Sometimes they were a three-ring binder that was hole-punched. Sometimes it was the flip chart quick guide, if it's a hurricane, do this. If it's a bomb threat, do this. If it's a sniper, do this. And those we always had to guard jealously as they moved around the room to make sure our trainer could get it back and someone didn't take it back as a model. And they also asked for us to involve speakers with disaster preparedness experience, which we did try to do. We always invited a local emergency management agency, the county or state representative from our PEMA, Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, or the county EMA Emergency Management Agency to come. Sometimes they'd come for 5 minutes in the morning. Sometimes they'd come over break time and make like a little presentation about how they're working with the schools. And we really saw that that was really an asset for the connectivity. Sometimes they'd never met before. I mean, I literally had EMAs, I don't know why they would say this, come in and say, "Oh, this is a good idea. We never thought about the school nurses before." It's like, okay, don't tell them that. And then I had, EMAs who would come in and be like, "Oh, hey, they already know everybody. They're all working on the same committees before." So to make that connection make sense, and they talked about things like, hey, share the floor plans, share the security codes, number your doors so you can tell me that there's, an intruder at door 6, and I can roll right up to that door, and I'll know where it is, and I don't have to go into the front office and say, "Where's door 6? So very basic logistics kinds of things to more sophisticated things. Some trends in our evaluation data is that they asked for additional preparedness related topics, and you can see what they are. So one of our objectives for today was to articulate 2 preparedness actions that school nurse trainees report a high degree of confidence to perform as a result of training. But what this is really telling us is what they want more of. So they got a little taste of it through our 6 hours together, and now they want more in depth. And as a result of that data, as I said, we use our evaluations to inform our future interventions. Our Center for Public Health Preparedness created several online modules. Their titles are Emergency Preparedness at School at Home and at Home. That was done by one of our state emergency management coordinators. We have Disaster Nursing, which was done by a colleague at the University of Pittsburgh School of Nursing. We have Stress Response During Disasters, which was done by a colleague at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center Disaster Management Center. We have Emergency Preparedness for Pandemics and All Hazards, Care of Children Exposed to Chemical Agents, and Resources for School Nurses. So all of those are online self-guided tutorial modules with Act 48 and CNE that are available online for nurses to take for more information or to take back to their colleagues who couldn't come to the six-hour session together. We also work with local or state emergency management agencies to train on incident command and management for schools, and we use the FEMA curriculum IS-100 for schools and IS-700, which is the basic, and then we've also done using the incident command system in schools. We did that at our Safe Schools Conference, and that's where we're going to practice incident command system through tabletops. So we're actually going to sit together with the school nurses and the administrators, and we've started getting like food service food service managers and transportation managers. We love it when the transportation managers come. We also get resource officers who come, and they all learn the incident command system together. Number one thing that the nurses and the group seem to be surprised at is that the principal is not always your best choice as the incident commander. That's like, whoa. When they learned that, they were like, oh, you got to tell the principal. Like, I can't go back to the district and tell the principal that. You have to tell the principal that. We also do sessions on PODs, points of dispensing, which in Pennsylvania is the way that we're going to get out mass prophylaxis or mass medication if there's ever a dirty bomb or if there's ever a smallpox outbreak. In Pennsylvania, actually, we're going to use our high school gymnasiums as the POD sites. Okay. And so one of the things that the nurses said they wanted more of was triage. So we told that to NASN along with everyone else across the U.S. who uses this NASN curriculum. So they developed this triage curriculum. It's 4 hours, so they responded to the request for, you know, less information or more time. So they only made it a half day, and it's very hands-on. They actually, you need a space where you can, like, do body moves and things like that. They really do the hands-on triage. When they first introduced this curriculum, it was called Practice and Principles of Triage, Developing and Leading First Aid Teams in Schools. So Pennsylvania immediately signed up for two sessions of this triage class, and then they changed the name to SET, School Emergency Triage Training, which is now the little logo with the kind of Jamaican colors. So we are hosting the first ever training of trainers for SET trainers in November of 2008 in Pennsylvania. Within the schools, some of the reasons that we're seeing more knowledge of the terminology and more administrators and more team involvement is because we have a mandate for schools to be NIMS compliant. So we have a little bit of leverage there. They have to be NIMS compliant to receive federal funds, and that includes the Department of Education, REMS, Readiness and Emergency Management for Schools grant. We have two REMS recipients in Pennsylvania. School districts can become NIMS compliant by basically adopting their county's incident command system, but that needs to be in writing, and the county's ICS plan should be an annex in the school plan. So again, we're forcing that collaboration, and we're trying to make those introductions. And also, our State Department of Health, our State Emergency Management Agency, and our State Department of Education did pandemic planning workshops all across Pennsylvania in 2007. So those three agencies went out and did a dog and pony show and talked about how they all need to work together and the schools need to be involved for their own protection, for the community's protection, and also for the PODs, you know, because they're going to be using their buildings. That's the information that I have for you about our experience and what the nurses have asked for and how NASN and the University of Pittsburgh Center for Public Health Preparedness have responded through SET and online training and other options. Thank you.